Blog Talk Radio.
This is VOCR, the voice of the Canadian province.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed, we are live in Technicolor.
Propaganda floods the media with visions of political apocalypse, but as one candidate or another is elected. There are, however, political fodder which requires closer scrutiny. Tonight, we shall try to do so. Gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification.
Good evening indeed. How's everybody doing out there? Hopefully everybody is safe and warm and have weathered the storms of the season and all is well with the world, or is it? Tonight we're going to look at some very dark and deep problems emerging in the world economy and also in Western politics. Tonight is not for the faint of heart. So if you're looking for some light chat and some light discussion, unfortunately, tonight is not your night. This is the OCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockets. I'm your host.
First time in my adult life, I am proud of my country.
I want fuel-efficient cars and long-lasting batteries and wind turbines manufactured here in China.
Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that.
Someone who knows from experience that if you have a small business, you did build that.
Of all the objectives we seek, first and foremost, is the establishment of lasting world peace. We know only too well that war comes not when the forces of freedom are strong. It is when they are weak that tyrants are tempted.
I'm glad to be able to join in this venerable tradition. Of course, I'm pleased that the president's here. We were chatting pleasantly this evening as if Tuesday night never happened.
Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, that you didn't build that.
Peace is made by the fact of strength, economic, military, and strategic. Peace is lost when such strength disappears, or just as bad, is seen by an adversary as disappearing.
I was actually hoping the president would bring Joe Biden along this evening, because he'll laugh at anything.
This is VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockets. 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
So let's get to the shout-outs. To the Southeast Brickies, much better half, glad you came to your senses. And to the BC Dreamcatcher, well, the snow fell upon us. Slick roads, cold nights, we're going to have to wait for a Chinook. And to the Scottish lass, we hope you find time soon. Jeeves, do we have mail?
Email, Governor.
Ken in Florida wrote to us. Ken said, my wife thinks you are a radical. I explained that you're a Canadian, and she now listens with me. Oh, well, what is your take on the Romney plans to punish the Chinese for unfair trade practices? Well, good question. Good question, Ken. Do appreciate your email. Make sure you keep them coming. Punishing the Chinese. I take it you're referring to the Romney's statement about registering them as an unfair trader and currency manipulator in order to fix prices and tariffs as a revenue stream. I see the need to prevent any country from manipulating trade. My concern is, now stay with me on this, as Ross Perot would say. You see, China sells product A to the U.S. The U.S. government impose a tariff, B, and taxes and transportation are paid as normal, C, and profit margins are calculated, D, and the customer pays A through D as a retail price. Now, in that equation, the government makes money, and the citizens pay more for the same product that was cheaper a few months ago. Now, if the government were to take the tariffs and place them in some kind of a trust fund to augment small business people in paying taxes and tariffs, then I could swallow the premise. But there has been no mention of how that will help the national production. Prices will continue to be competitive, but always payable by the customer. Now, is that clear as mud? I guess my point being is, whatever tariffs are placed on imported Chinese goods, the government will collect the increase, not the consumer. So thanks for the question. Jason from Montreal, Quebec, he wrote to us and he was quite blunt. He said, are you in favor of Quebec separating from Canada if they win the next referendum? Well, Jason, I wish for Canada what the majority of Canadians wish for. I hope for Canada what the Confederation promised. And I demand for Canada that the Canadian Constitution and the Charter of Rights be upheld at all costs. Now, in such, Quebec has the right to question their continued existence in the Canadian Confederation. Quebec, as a separate entity to Canada, would cause possible ripple effect within the Western Maverick provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia on the West Coast. So, do I wish to see Canada splinter? Obviously not. But if the law that we all accept gives an overwhelming endorsement to discussions about the road forward, then I favor the discussions now. Before a referendum is forced, people need to be aware of the implications of the action and the effects it would have upon the North American continent before making an elected decision. I also think it's paramount that the people of Quebec know exactly what they're signing onto and what is not going to be delivered to them by the rest of Canada if they choose the separation route. There are billions and billions of dollars at stake for a referendum on separation. So thanks for your email, Jason. Good luck, Bonchon. Paula from Nevada wrote to us and she said, I live a few miles from the Art Bell compound. Oh, right on. You remind me a little of him in his early years. Brash, cocky, open, and engaging, with a mind for information. Keep it up. Well, thank you for the accolades, my God. You know, it's with a great deal of help from a number of researchers that bring me the information that I spew to you on a weekly basis. So I can't take all the credit. They do some excellent work. Question that you had at the end of your statement, which I truly appreciate, is what's happening with the Canadian pipeline? Regards, Paula. Well, thanks, Paula. Mr. Bell is a radio god. There's no one like him, and very few will ever come close. And I appreciate your opinion, but greats such as Art Bell have forgotten more than I could possibly ever know in a lifetime. Their depth of research and their quality of reporting was profound. Reporting now is an amateur sport in comparison, but I do appreciate the compliment. We shall discuss the pipeline a little later in the show, but I will say this, that a government discussion paper has intimated that a deal where the federal Canadian government will give some tax waivers to British Columbia and Alberta will drop their royalty by a couple of points to permit BC receive a capped royalty revenue stream and a reserve tax to compensate for possible oil spills which could damage the environment. But negotiations are ongoing, both officially and unofficially. When we come back, we shall look at what we now know about the Benghazi attack, and is it enough? Is it enough to wake up voters before the November the 6th election when we come back?
Time for a break. We'll be right back.
Constitutional liberty
is now. Got an opinion? Want to make a statement? Phone lines are open. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Let me say this. Every American who is thinking about who should be our next president, no one will work harder. No one will care more. And no one will move heaven and earth like Mitt Romney to make this country a better place to live.
We're a nation of immigrants. We're the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the ones who wanted a better life, the driven ones, the ones who woke up at night hearing that voice telling them that life in the place called America could be better. They came not just in pursuit of the riches of this world, but for the richness of this life. Freedom. Freedom of religion. Freedom to speak their mind. Freedom to build a life. And yes, freedom to build a business with their own hands.
Reform our tax code in a way that is fair and responsible, which, by the way, means let's stop giving tax breaks to businesses that ship jobs and factories overseas. Let's reward companies that create jobs and manufacturing right here in the United States of America.
On air live, 347-324-3287.
Will work harder. No one will care more. And no one will move heaven and earth like Mitt Romney to make this country a better place to live.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
Ah, yes, Benghazi Gate.
Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification. Calling night.
An open, festering sore on the President Obama's election plans. Benghazi Gate. Now, the White House are best to keep the story and other stories under wraps until after November the 6th. But the age-old questions are now being asked. What did they know, and when did they know it? And why were reinforcements not authorized? We have seen official communications. We've seen the emails. We've seen and heard the radio traffic. Stories of special forces 4 hours away told to stand down. Live drones, video of the fight, and AC-30s told not to engage. As the story unfolds, it certainly doesn't look good for Barack Obama. Tales of treachery and agencies against agencies, miscalculations, wrong assumptions, error in judgment, and military personnel dead because of inactions. Some on the internet chat call for impeachment. Others just call to shame him from office. Will the truth about Benghazi ever be told? Request denied. Stand down. Haunting orders from superiors while in the midst of a firefight with overwhelming forces. The assassination of the Libyan ambassador and his brave security detail will be thoroughly investigated and probed. People's employment futures always become the shaken tree, and those who fail to have a firm political grip within their professional circle will become fallen fruit and fodder to a greater, sinister plan, deniability, at least until after the election. Now, on Blaze TV the other night, Ed Klein spilled some very interesting beans. Apparently, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton ordered additional security for the U.S. mission in Benghazi ahead of the terrorist attack, but the orders were never carried out, according to legal counsel to Clinton, who spoke to best-selling author Ed Klein. Those same sources also say that former President Bill Clinton has been urging his wife to release official State Department documents that prove she called for additional security at the compound in Libya, which would almost certainly result in President Obama losing the election. During the 2008 election, I remember a number of news sources reporting a Clinton treasure trove of negative information against Barack Hussein Obama. I wonder what happened to it. And is there enough time to release the truth before the election? Not without media assistance, I wouldn't think. And to date, they have not exactly been for the people. They have not actually stood up for what they supposedly believe in. And that's the truth in journalism. Of course, there are those who believe Obama to be a usurper, an illegal president, and if provable, ramifications would be unimaginable, and all that was signed by the usurper president would become null and void, including the TARP funds, handouts, and of course, military hardware sales to the enemy. GM would, yes, once again, be bankrupt. President Obama is rushing from state to state like a plate spinner on an old variety show, claiming he is woman-friendly and works for equality. Well, information unearthed this week shows that in 1999 legislative vote, then Illinois State Senator Barack Obama was the sole state senator to not vote for a bill that would protect sexual assault victims from having the details of their cases revealed publicly. On May the 11th of that year, Obama voted present on a bill ultimately made law that allows victims of sex crimes to request that their cases be sealed from the public view following a criminal conviction. Illinois Senate voting records show that Obama was the only senator who did not vote in favor of the bill. Obama's unique objection to voting for a bill meant to protect the victims of sex crimes is a substantial departure from the picture he has attempted to paint for women voters while running on the stump. And it's unfortunate when politics start to mask the truth of who the real candidate is and what they are really all about.
We'll be right back, right after this quick station break. Got an opinion? Want to make a statement? Phone lines are open, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockets on blogtalkradio.com. Opinion 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. The phone lines are open. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Guru Nostra.
Now, before we get to tonight's festivities, the beginning of the show, or at least the attempted beginning of the show, made us about 30 minutes late. We are not quite sure what happened, whether we were restricted for a certain time, for a certain reason. Maybe what we have to say doesn't sit well with others. Maybe we're being restricted purposefully, or maybe it's just the darn internet is so busy. But whatever the reason, we are 30 minutes behind a normal schedule, so we're hoping that some of our relay stations down the line manage to stay with us. And we are giving you a 10-minute warning that we will be going 30 minutes over to take the full hour. So we hope you stay with us. This is the VOCR, Voice of the Canadian Rockets, and I am your host. The international election observers that were invited by Obama to visit Texas polling places during the election, well, Texas didn't take too well. And they threatened to arrest them if they interfered with the process of election. And the UN observers finally chose not to attend, although Obama did announce that they had full immunity from being arrested in the United States. Well, Texas said they were not welcome, and Obamagate. Apparently, UN polling observers were supposed to spread out across Texas and watch the upcoming presidential election. This was seen as a real slap in the face of Texas legislatures, and frankly, they pushed back. Now, as I mentioned earlier, many of our listeners on the northeastern seaboard are cleaning up after Hurricane Sandy. The storm forced the shutdown of up to 6 refinery and pumping junctions in the North American pipeline system, along with eastern seaboard, that has caused concern at the existing reserves of oil, which are available in what locations and where and how are they being pumped, because without electricity, nothing pumps. The eastern seaboard was shut down Sunday night and will restart Thursday today, but it will be slow. And it may take up to a full month for full services to be restored. Now, so far, the estimated cost for Hurricane Sandy for total rebuild is about $60 billion. Of course, the boardwalk is trashed. Tourist season is over. Now, here's an interesting story. In 2010, Obama threw a $1 million dinner for the Mexican president. Apparently, other dinners for Chinese leader Hu Jintao and owner of Obama's debt, and the UK Prime Minister Cameron and India's Prime Minister were all in the $500,000 range. Were these normal expenditures? Well, not even close, according to the man who ran presidential operations for the White House, at least for 21 years, from Reagan until Bush. Mr. Gary Walters, who ran presidential household operations during the Democratic and Republican administrations and retiring in 2007, said that the costs reflected in documents were excessive. They were high. Now, the chief usher of the White House from the Reagan to George W. Bush presidencies consulted a former White House colleague and said neither of them could recall entertainment costs anywhere near those revealed in the documents provided. The highest cost events they could remember was $190,000 to $200,000 range, and that was for a very large dinner outside that was probably somewhere in the vicinity of 500 people with two different tents, noting that the event was held under President Clinton. Now, Americans can eat spam while Michelle and Barry can use taxpayer money to throw lavish parties for their friends in the name of diplomacy, so that all the privileged champions of the oppressed can chow down on prime fare. A chunk of this money is going to event planner Brian Raffinelli, who did Chelsea Clinton and Huma Abedin's wedding. Not to each other, of course. Raffinelli is the business partner, boyfriend of Mark Walsh, who these days is the deputy chief, deputy chief of the State Department's Office of Protocol. Now, Walsh processes state dinner expenses planned by Raffinelli as an outside contractor. Now, who says Obama doesn't create jobs? I mean, really? Really?
We'll be right back, right after this quick station break. Got an opinion? Want to make a statement? Phone lines are open. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockets on blogtalkradio.com.
opinion, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. The phone lines are open. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Guru Nostra. 4-3-2-8-7-3-4-7-3-2-4-3-2-8-7.
Even though we are 30 minutes over, or going 30 minutes over, we do still invite your phone calls down until the bottom of the hour. If you have a gripe, you want something to say, you have something to say, you want to lay some information on our many listeners around the world, please feel free to do so at 347-324-3287. Quite easy to do with most of the people that have long-distance access nowadays, and hopefully that's all of you. You know, feel free to call, and we don't mind. You know, I must admit I was very disappointed with Trump's publicity gimmick. I thought more of him, but his idea of giving $5 million for Obama's records to unseal all of the records which the Obama operatives have spent 4 years and millions of dollars sealing, information which is obviously sensitive documents, possibly college applications and student loans and passport records, the offer of $5 million from Donald Trump will no doubt go uncollected. He's going to have to up the ante, but there's not enough time. You see, the Democrats are playing down the clock. With all of the negative court cases and judicial reviews coming down the pike, all the negative business that the Obama administration has done, that is now coming home to roost, will all be after November the 6th. They're running out the clock. And there's not much time to get the information out there and to make sure the information is solid and qualified. And the internet audio chats and the internet text rooms and the blogs are about the only place left to get the word out. So Facebook your friends, Twitter them, let them know about this show, get them on board, and get them working. Because November the 6th, there has to be a change. The leader of Al-Qaeda has urged Muslims to kidnap Westerners in exchange for imprisoned jihadists. The leader of Al-Qaeda has urged Muslims to kidnap Westerners in exchange for imprisoned jihadists. Al-Zawahiri also urged supporters of Syria uprising and called for the implementation of Islamic Sharia law in Egypt. Well, funnily enough, the Muslim Brotherhood have just called for Sharia law to be the base of their new constitution. God help us all. In an undated two-hour videotape posted this week on militant forums, the Egyptian-born jihadist said that abducting nationals of countries waging wars on Muslims is the only way to free our captives. And Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, the Egyptian cleric serving a life sentence in U.S. prisons for his masterminding of the 93 bombings in New York City. Now, funnily enough, I read a story today, and I believe it went out on the Spywire on VOCRadio.com, that the Obama administration are considering releasing the sheikh in some form or another. In some fashion or another, that the Obama administration is trying to work out a subtle way of releasing the sheikh that is going to be palatable to those that locked him up for the rest of his life. Candidate Romney mentioned in the recent presidential debates that the American Navy needs attention. And after doing some research, the research team went to work looking for some kind of statistics. And the U.S. military faces a readiness crisis. A recent congressional hearing generated headlines about the Navy's surface fleet falling into disrepair. But that was news 4 years ago. Across all the services, long-standing readiness problems are worsening. Breakdowns are happening more frequently. Several years ago, an Air Force F-15C literally broke in half during flight. Since then, two F-18s have caught fire aboard ships, and today every single cruiser hull has cracks. A-10C Warthogs have fuselage cracks, and the UH-1N Twin Huey helicopter fleet is regularly grounded. Over half of the Navy's deployed aircraft are not ready for combat, and this is just a sample of the readiness problems plaguing those who serve in uniform. U.S. forces and their military commanders are putting on a brave face, but it's beyond irresponsible for Congress and the Obama administration to not provide the resources needed to address the problems immediately. After a decade of constant combat and ever-increasing disaster relief and homeland defense missions, readiness among all U.S. military services, National Guard and reserves included, is dangerously low. Symptoms include delayed, shortened, and less diverse training, plugging personnel and equipment shortfalls in deploying units with resources from others. All of these play a part. Reduced maintenance for worn-out equipment. Shortened rest time before deploying or redeploying overseas. But is Washington listening? Well, in April, the engine of the FA-18C Hornet caught fire above the USS Carl Vinson. And in March, the engine exploded on a Marine Hornet about to take off for the USS John Stennis. As these aging fighter aircraft burst into flames, senior defense officials were telling policymakers that keeping the older FA-18s in safe flying condition was one of the most serious challenges. Built in the 1980s and 90s, the jets were designed to fly for 6,000 hours, but delayed delivery of the replacement F-35 Joint Striker fighter forced the service to try and squeeze 10,000 flight hours out of the Hornet. Today's Navy is experiencing extreme levels of stress, while the fleet has shrunk by about 15% since 1998. The number of ships deployed overseas has remained constant at about 100. Now, each ship goes to sea longer and more often, resulting in problems such as the well-publicized shortfalls in surface ship condition. With no surge capacity left in the fleet, each new casualty ripples through the schedules of dozens of ships. With the end of supplemental funding, Navy maintenance funding will be cut by almost 20% this year. In this context, a relatively small additional reduction in maintenance funding could render a Navy with 250 to 280 ships capable of keeping only 50 to 60 ships at sea. We are continuing to expose the Obama administration and the president's placement of personnel that do not have the interest of the poor or middle class at heart. This becomes very clear when one begins to dig into the theories of people such as Carol Browner and so many others. We will dissect Stephen Chu, the energy secretary, who has helped drive up the price of gasoline and everything associated with it, from the bread we eat to the goods we buy at the stores. Now, it's no secret that when Obama took office, the price of a gallon of gasoline was around $1.84 per gallon. Now, it is around $3.65 per gallon or higher. Now, depending on where you live, in some cases, it's over $4 a gallon. Now, to be 100% honest, this price should not be because the United States has more oil just waiting to be retrieved from the ground that the entire world has on hand. What is the reason that this oil is not taken out of the ground? Well, June 5 letters, Obama and his wish to make everything green in his energy secretary also wishes. Stephen Chu is a very brilliant man. He became a professor of physics at Stanford University, where he continued his research on trapping and cooling atoms. In 1997, Chu was awarded a Nobel Prize in physics for his work in that field. Now, although Chu has this great honor, one he had to earn, not a Nobel Prize just granted to him because he was well-liked, as was the one for Obama, he may be the most radical environmentalist on the White House staff. When you get a chance, check him out. Stephen Chu. Now, Obama tells audiences there will be hand-to-hand combat if Republicans win. A Republican majority in Congress would mean hand-to-hand combat on Capitol Hill for the next 2 years, threatening policies Democrats have enacted to stabilize the economy, President Obama warned on Wednesday. Speaking on Michael Basden's syndicated radio show, Obama also made a direct appeal to African Americans about the importance of the November vote. It makes you wonder what diabolical plans are really afoot, you know? It makes you not want to trust anyone, huh?
Listen to a story about a man named Jed. A poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. Oil, that is, black gold, Texas tea.
With all of the resistance and political greed forcing major challenges to a possible West Coast pipeline and servicing the Asian market, TransCanada Pipeline have announced that an eastern oil pipeline proposal, technically, economically feasible. Sorry, out of Calgary, an early stage proposal to ship as many as 1 million barrels a day of Western crude to eastern refineries seems to be gaining some kind of traction. Executives with the pipeline giant TransCanada Corporation spoke about it Tuesday. Now, TransCanada Corporation, which announced a 3 billion oil sands pipeline with a Chinese partner this week, said it may issue fresh debt to finance future projects and tap low interest rates. Now, the Calgary-based company behind the planned Keystone XL pipeline has added $7 billion of projects this year. Chief Financial Officer Don Marchand told analysts on a conference call, we will be opportunistic in sourcing required capital given the compelling low interest rate environment. Adding that the new Alberta pipeline project with a unit of PetroChina will probably be funded with cash. TransCanada and such rivals as Enbridge and AltaGas will sell debt as production accelerates in the Alberta oil sands. The amazing oil sands and their fantastic expansion. But, you know, the idea of an eastern pipeline taking Alberta bitumen to the east for refinery should send alarm bells to the governments of British Columbia as to what they may lose out in by not permitting a West Coast pipeline. Now, granted, there are some major, major environmental hurdles, but given that, BC better look a little closer at the opportunity. Now, in recent months, the Calgary-based company has been floating the idea of converting part of its natural gas mainline, the eastbound main artery for natural gas out of Alberta, partly to oil service to serve refineries in eastern Canada and the U.S. Eastern Seaboard that currently rely on very pricey crude from overseas. We've now determined this project is both technically and economically feasible, according to the CEO, Russ Girling, who told analysts on a conference call to discuss the company's third quarter. Discussions with potential shippers and other stakeholders are underway to determine if this is a project that the market wants to see, and based on early indications, they believe it is. The project, 80% of which would comprise of existing pipe, could ship between 500,000 and 1 million barrels of oil per day, depending on demand. A preliminary estimate puts the project's price tag at roughly about $5 billion, but a lot still needs to be worked out. TransCanada would need to add new pump stations along the length of the pipeline to undertake a lot of work to make sure pipe is in good enough shape to ship oil. Now, it's not clear yet whether the line would stop at refineries in Montreal or extend all the way to the East Coast, nor is it known yet how much appetite there is to ship the crude offshore to Europe or Asia via marine terminals in Quebec or the Maritimes. The obvious market, as in Eastern North America, TransCanada's President of Energy and Oil Pipelines is discussing that. Eastern Canadian refineries process between 600,000 and 700,000 barrels a day, and the U.S. Eastern Seaboard refines another 1 million barrels on top of that. Now, those refineries are geared to process light sweet crude, so TransCanada would likely be shipping them synthetic crude oil from Alberta's oil sands, rather than the tarry bitumen that hasn't been upgraded, as well as high-quality oil from the lucrative Bakken information, which stretches through the parts of Saskatchewan, North Dakota, and Montana. Now, in time, those eastern refineries may choose to reconfigure their equipment to handle heavy oil from Alberta, possibly. Early on Tuesday, TransCanada said its third quarter profits fell slightly as improved earnings from the Keystone pipeline were offset by downtime at key power plants. As the White House tries to dam up this information and all of the negative information which is cascading through the once friendly safety of media corruption, news stories continue to break. Health law to shrink workforce by 800,000. What a headline. CBO Director Doug Elmendorf told the House Budget Committee on Thursday that the health care law will reduce employment by 0.5% by 2021 because some people will no longer have to work just to afford health insurance. The report published in August said the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the legislation on net will reduce the amount of labor used in the economy by a small amount, roughly 0.5%, primarily by reducing the amount of labor that workers choose to supply. The net effect reflects changes in incentives in the labor market that operate in both directions. Some provisions of the legislation will discourage people from working more hours or entering the workforce, and other provisions will encourage them to work more. Republicans gleefully seized on the admission, eagerly promoting it as evidence of what they call the law's job kill effect. More bad news for American families was how Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan's office described the report. In the release, since day one, Republicans have opposed Obamacare for a number of reasons, and it would destroy jobs. Minority Leader Pelosi, Leader Reid, and others said we were wrong. Guess not, said John Murray, Deputy Chief of Staff to the Majority Leader Ed Cantor. So, they weren't wrong. It does mess with the economy. It does mess with the workforce.
And now, a weekly opinion from Guru Saves.
As we close in on the U.S. election date, November the 6th, 2012, and review the information we know of both candidates, and the information we don't know, being suppressed until after the election, we hope our American cousins make the right choice. Canada is dependent upon the well-being of the United States of America, and we are joined at the hip with the global economy battle. Canada is consistently in the corner of the United States of America, and will never leave her alone against the common enemies of freedom and religious tolerance. As America looks into the political souls and empty wallets and cupboards, they shall make the decision, and the world will live with that decision, which could decide the future of the grand old flag and the ship of state, which has offered safety and security for many nations for the last 75 years. We mentioned earlier about the East Coast refineries being shut down because of the storm, power outages at hundreds of gas stations, and a distribution bottleneck due to flooding damage and power loss, and it's caused a gasoline shortage in the New York metropolitan area that may not be cleared up for at least a week, according to the industry. You see, what was a problem for drivers when Superstorm Sandy ended 2 days ago has become a nightmare for frazzled motorists who find themselves in gas lines that can stretch on for hours. Some lines were hundreds of cars long in sections of New Jersey and New York Thursday. And in a number of locations, police monitored the lines which interfered with traffic flow. The problem is not gasoline supplies, but the ability to distribute it, especially from the critical area around Linden, New Jersey, an estimated 75% of more of the gas stations in New Jersey were closed either because they had no gasoline or no power or both. Power is at the root of it. That means gasoline that is already in inventory, already refined in those big tanks you see along the side of the turnpike, they can't get the gasoline into the delivery trucks without power. Investigation finds Obama administration massively understating the stimulus fraud to win re-election. Vice President Joe Biden was supposed to be Barack Obama's sheriff on the stimulus, watchdogging the nearly $1 trillion spending spree that was supposed to get the U.S. economy going again. Nobody messes with Joe, the American people were told. Well, 3 years later, the Obama administration says that out of the huge sum of $11.1 million was misspent. But an investigation by the Washington Guardian found that Sheriff Joe must have been asleep at the job, because the government's fiscal watchdogs have identified more than $5.8 billion in problematic stimulus spending, a figure that dwarfs the election year statistics the Obama administration is using to tout the integrity of the economic recovery program. A Washington Guardian review of investigation reports has found different. The problems uncovered in hundreds of federal audits and investigations range from estimated millions in agricultural department funds for the rural poor that went to pay for prohibited homes with swimming pools, to millions more that went to construct firms that did shoddy weatherization work or were later barred from government contracting because of criminal activity. The tally calculated by the Washington Guardian so far accounts for about 2.4% of the $243.6 billion in President Obama's $830 billion stimulus program. That went to direct spending, such as grants and loans. The figure is expected to rise as the Inspector General and the 29 federal agencies that got funding from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act pursue more than 1,900 open criminal investigations and hundreds more audits. The audits by the Inspector Generals contrast with the more rosy assessment offered by the Obama administration. From debating Vice President Joe Biden to White House surrogates on the campaign trail, officials have been using narrowly cast statistics to convince voters that precious few of their tax dollars were wasted in the effort to revitalize the economy. One of their favorite figures is 11.1 million, the amount the U.S. Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board says comes from court records of those stimulus recipients already convicted specifically of the crime of fraud through June. It amounts to a micro fraction of 1% of the money spent so far on stimulus grants and loans. The Recovery Act has been responsibly implemented with low levels of fraud, waste, and abuse, the White House said on its website. And something just a little touchy here as we head down into the final 6 or 7 minutes. We received a notification through the internet today of a story that was breaking. CBC were about to break a major story, and I was kind of tipped up about it, so I was waiting for it. And then the story came in. A confidential government memorandum obtained by the CBC News warns that soaring costs of developing the Alberta oil sands could put a brakes on the massive project, stalling one of the main engines of the Canadian economy. The booming oil sands industry supports tens of thousands of Canadian jobs and pumps billions of dollars a year into the national economy. The memo written by Mark Corey, one of the highest-ranking officials in the Federal Department of Natural Resources, warns that if the current trend of spiraling labor and other costs continues, investors may start to turn off the tap on the massive amounts of money needed to develop the oil sands. Although current crude prices promote oil sands development, ever-increasing capital and operating costs could make this price insufficient to support oil sands development at forecast levels, Corey writes. Cost increases are currently the biggest risk to investment in the sector and could jeopardize the viability of some projects, he has said. So, in other words, they're spending too much in the oil patch. Now, Corey's memo reflects a growing concern inside government over the future of the oil sands, and specifically the massive amount of capital investment that will be needed to fuel the continued development. Natural Resource Minister Joe Oliver recently estimated the oil sands would need about $650 billion in capital investments in the next decade alone, almost five times what has been spent there over the past 50 years. Now, the memo written in April this year was obtained under the Access of Information Act and appears to have been prepared for Natural Resource Minister Joe Oliver. The document predates the Harper government's current review of foreign takeovers of two Canadian energy companies. It nonetheless bolsters the contention of many in industry and government that Canada can hardly afford to turn away foreign investment in the oil sands. The Canadian oil sands, you got to love them, you got to hate them, but they are making the economy churn, and the economy is doing quite well because of it. Thank goodness.
This is VOC. are the voice of the Canadian Rockies.
We believe probable cause exists indicating that forgery and fraud may have been committed.
President Obama's status on Arizona's ballot is in question unless Hawaii verifies he was born there.
The Rockets led by example. When we took our trip to Africa and visited his home country in Kenya.
Besides, I happen to know that my approval ratings are still very high in the country of my birth.
This is the voice of the Canadian Rockets.
On air live, 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
And now a word from the President of the United States of America, President Barack Hussein Obama.
Sorry, I just noticed that I jumped the gun here. Go ahead and move it up.
Now,
We
now return you to normally scheduled programming. Phone lines are now open, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. You are listening to VOCR Radio on the Terror Chat Radio Network. We'll be right back with more of Open Minds.
For every person who found a job last month, which was not a lot, 3 people gave up looking for a job.
Even though we all struggle to make ends meet, some being luckier than others, the pressure which surrounds our daily lives sometimes sends average citizens off the rails. But for the grace of God, go I. There's a modern saying that many citizens are 2 paychecks away from the street. The downturn of the economy certainly has not helped in reducing pressures on the home front. If you're doing okay, don't forget those who are less fortunate. Be considerate to their needs and their feelings. But for the grace of God, go I.
This is the voice of the Canadian Rockets on blogtalkradio.com.
Looking to contact the show? VOCR2012@gmail.com. 24-hour opinion line 240-696-6030 or on air live 347-324-3287.
For every person who got a job last month, which was not a lot, 3 people gave up looking for a job.
This is the voice of the Canadian Rockets on TerraChat Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, the purveyor of political pontification.
Yeah. As we head to the bottom of the hour, we do appreciate you hanging around. We hope we didn't lose too many people on the hiccup for Blog Talk Radio Connection on this part of the show. If you did, we are available on archive, and we do invite you to check out the archive because you may find something down there worth listening to. And by all means, send me an email. Let me know exactly how you think, what your feelings are, what your emotions are on subjects. We look forward to hearing them. Until then.
Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven and the first earth had disappeared now. Then I heard a loud voice call from the throne. You see this city? Here God lives among men. He will make his home among them. His name is God with them. He will wipe away all tears from their eyes. There will be no more death and no more mourning or sadness. The world of the past has gone. This has been a TerraChat Network production. www.terrachatnet.com.